thank you. It's great to be with you this morning and be part of this, I think, really interesting series that you're looking at the moment on hospitality. And I want to start this morning by sharing with you a story of what I think is one of the most profound and yet most complicated experiences of hospitality that I've ever had. So it was about 8 years ago. And I was in a village in rural Malawi in Southeast Africa, one of the poorest countries in the world. And we were there with Global Interaction, a Baptist mission organisation with cross-cultural workers who have been living and working there for over 20 years. But we were staying in town, and so we had driven to the out of town into the rural areas and then parked our cars and then trekked our way down to this very remote village. And when we got there, we had kind of come, I guess, as the honoured guests. This is a village that Ian Dix, who'd been living there for over 20 years at the time, had been visiting and had opportunity to build relationship with people, share the good news about Jesus, and people had become believers. So there was this small community, a small church, if you like, although it didn't look anything like this, but a small community of people who had put their trust in Jesus. And so as we came to visit, we were their honoured guests because in their minds, you know, we were the people who were kind of responsible for sending and funding this person who had come and told them about Jesus. And so they invited us to join them at their table. I've got a photo and it may not look very much like a table to you, but here in this kind of open hut on the floor before us was laid out a feast, the best that they had to offer. Now, the main food that we had is what's called enchima, a very common food across that part of Africa, kind of the daily staple, and it's made up of this maize porridge that is kind of put into bowls and balled up and so that you can then take it and eat it and you can dip it in. And I believe, you know, for a lot of people across that part of Africa, that would be what you would eat every day on its own. But at a feast like this with special guests, there were all kinds of relishes, so different bowls with different sauces and vegetables cooked up as best as they could. I think there was even one that had a little bit of chicken in it, sharing the very best they had to offer their meat. And so we're invited to sit and join with the elders of this community and share this meal. Now, being the good Westerners that we are, maize porridge is not our staple, and it's pretty stodgy. It's pretty heavy. I'd had it before this. It kind of sits in your stomach like a lump, so we find it quite difficult to eat. But more than that, we knew that after lunch, we were going to leave the village, get back in our cars, drive back to town to the guest house where we were staying, and we already knew that what was on the menu that night was spaghetti bolognese because we'd smelt them cooking it that morning. And we knew that this was their meal for the day, and we had been offered to join it. And what you can't see in that photo, but you can see in the next, is actually the women and the children and the other members of that little community who had prepared the meal for us and were kind of waiting for us to share it with the honoured guests at the table before they would eat their meal. And so we were trying to be as gracious guests as we could and as polite as we could. And so we had a little bit of enchima and, you know, dip it into the, just taking little bits and dipping it into the relish and just eating it slowly. But every time we took it off our plate, they would put more on our plates. They were just being so generous and so hospitable. So we started to say, oh, no, thank you. We're full. We've had plenty. Thank you so much. We're full. And as soon as we said that, suddenly everything stopped and everybody stopped eating. And they were done. And we said, no, you keep eating. And they said, no, we're full. We're done. We're full. We've had enough. And we knew what's going on. Unfortunately, Ian had been with them for long enough that he felt free to break what was probably a cultural taboo and say, no, tell us what's really going on. And they said, no, we've had enough to eat. And he said, no, you haven't. You've hardly eaten anything. And these people haven't eaten anything at all. We, as the honoured guests, had said, we have eaten enough. We are full. Of course, that meant to them, if they kept eating, they would be being greedy. They would be having more than their fair share. So we were trying to be hospitable and generous, and they were trying to be hospitable and generous, and it was all very complicated. You see, I'd grown up with a mother who used to say to me when I didn't eat my vegetables, there are starving children in Africa. And of course I would respond, well, send the vegetables to them and they can eat them. It's not that simple. And here I was, literally in a village in Africa with starving children, and it still wasn't that simple. I tell you that story because I come to this topic this morning of food and justice and injustice, not as an expert by any means. I come as someone who is really learning in this space, and I've been very challenged and have learned a lot in preparing this message for today. So whoever came up with the idea of this series, I thank them because it's not something that I've ever spoken about before. And some of you maybe are much more expert in this area than me. Maybe you've done a lot of thinking about the justice and injustice of food and made some really strong decisions about what you eat and how you choose to eat. And maybe others of you have never thought about this topic before. So my prayer is that we would join together in a conversation today as we listen to what the scriptures have to say and what it might mean for us. When we go to the scriptures, it's surprising. It's really only when you pay attention to it, you notice it is everywhere. And how much what it has to say about food is connected to ideas of justice. Just a quick whip through the Bible. From the beginnings of the Old Testament, the Torah, the law of God, we have all these stories about food, just a handful to highlight for you. You have the story of the manna, of God providing food from heaven for his people, blessing them with something that probably was a bit more like that Inshema than it's like what I eat every day at home here. And then throughout the Torah, throughout Leviticus and Numbers and Exodus, you have all kinds of laws about food, about what the people of God can eat and can't eat, but also about how they are to grow and produce food, laws like the gleaning laws, which say, don't take every single grain of food that you can, but leave some that so that those who are poor can come and have enough to eat. And then you move into the wisdom literature of the Old Testament, and you get all kinds of proverbs about food. I was stunned this week. I thought I would just find a few proverbs to share with you. There were so many, I couldn't even list them all. So many proverbs about food, but about working to produce food and connecting the labor of your hands to the food that you eat, and contrasting that with food that is gained by what the Proverbs call fraud and gained in ways that are not connected to the work of our hands. There's Proverbs about where you sit at a table when you share a meal with someone, which position and where you should sit in relation to the other. Everybody has enough. And then you go to the Gospels, and I was just teaching our interns on this week, but I challenge you to find a page in the Gospels where Jesus isn't eating. There might be pages where it doesn't say he's eating because he's talking, but you'll flip back a few pages and realize he's talking at a meal. Jesus is always at table with people. He's always experiencing and sharing hospitality. The table is a key element of God's mission as Jesus comes and sits with people and shares food with them. And he also has a number of stories around food. He tells these parables, these stories about banquets, and he paints a picture of God's kingdom using the imagery of food. And then, of course, we get into the early church in Acts and the letters, and we read of the early church sharing all the food that they had in common so everyone had enough. But we also read of them abstaining from certain foods, foods that was polluted as they saw it, food that had been sacrificed to idols, food that was participating in that which was not of God, and noticing the inequity amongst them. And we read of churches struggling, like the church at Corinth, when they come together and they have rich people who have brought all the food and have more than enough and poor people who have nothing to eat, and how do they share a meal together when there is such inequity between them. And behind all of this, I think there's actually a key image of God, a key metaphor of God that is behind all of this, which is the picture of God as the host. A little bit of a tangent here, but metaphors is something I did some work on in my studies, and metaphors can be explicit, like we say God is our rock, you know, or God is king. But metaphors can also be implicit, where we don't name them, but we talk about something as if the metaphor exists. I'll give you my best example. Emotions are like water, said nobody ever, right? We never talk about the fact that emotions are like water, but that is a metaphor we use all the time. We talk about our emotions flowing and overflowing and welling up and pouring out. We are talking about our emotions as if they are like water. We just haven't named the underlying metaphor. And when this was pointed out to me, that this is an underlying metaphor of the scriptures, that God is the host who has a table prepared, who welcomes us to join and dine with him, it blew my mind, because it is everywhere. From the sacrificial laws, which we assume was someone going and kind of offering an animal and then leaving, but most of the sacrifices in the Old Testament, you offer the animal at the temple and then you sit down at the table with the priest and you eat that animal and you eat that food with God, because God has invited you to his table, to the Passover table and the people of the Exodus, to the Lord's Supper around the table. God is the host who has the food to share hospitably with us and says, come, join me at my table. So perhaps it shouldn't surprise us that the Bible has so much to say about food. And perhaps it also shouldn't surprise us, because although we live in a world where we can easily separate the spiritual from the physical, the sacred from the secular, the tasks of worship from the tasks of daily life, that way of thinking owes much more to Greco-Roman philosophy and heresy and Gnosticism than it does to the ways of the scriptures, where everything we do, wholly and solely, is spiritual. where everything we are as God's people and every activity of our lives is connected to our faith in God. And so our food and our eating and our sharing at table is a part of what it means to be in relationship with God and to be in relationship with one another as his people. Something that we do every day and we need to do every day, eating, is a part of God's purposes and God's ways of speaking into our lives. And so the topic that I was asked to talk about today is this idea of the justice and injustice of food, how our eating practices are connected to our relationships with one another, and how we live out love and justice in practice when it comes to food. And it's really got me thinking about food as both a gift and an opportunity, an act of justice on God's behalf, but a way that we can practice justice ourselves. And so there are two key questions I want to ask us this morning. First is this: is there enough to share? And the second is this: who is invited to the table? So those are the key questions I want us to spend some time unpacking. So firstly, this idea of, is there enough to share? Now, there's a pretty simple, obvious answer. I could just say yes and sit down and we'd be done. But what does it mean to think about food and justice in our world today, and what do the scriptures have to say into this idea of there being enough to share? Because we sit in an interesting space in this. I imagine that I would be saying very different things if I had grown up in that village in Malawi and was talking about this topic. But we come from our experience and our perspective. And so a few thoughts that I've drawn from those scriptures about this question. The first is the idea that food in the scriptures is always seen as the gift of the Creator. Food is God's good gift. From Genesis 1, the creation, what God has made, is a concrete manifestation of God's love and his care for his people. God is the one who provides food for his people. Literally in the desert, the manna, but also literally by creating people with the ability to work the land and from it produce the food which they eat. The challenge for me, and maybe for many of you, is from the work of our hands. I've never farmed any food. I've never grown any crops. Some of you might. I don't even have like a veggie patch at home. I live in the city in an apartment. So some of you might have a little bit more connection than I do. But we go to the supermarket and we buy our food, or we turn up at a restaurant and they put it on our plate. And I wonder if we've lost some of that connection. We've lost the story that food is God's good gift for his people. There's a reason why we say grace before we eat a meal. It is a moment of pausing and recognizing that this food that we're about to eat is not of ourselves. It is a gift that God has given us. It is a gift of God's good creation. I've noticed something interesting over the last few years. I've noticed, maybe it's just me and my friends, but a number of places where I've been where we'll say grace and we'll pray for all kinds of things and then we're like, oops, we forgot to pray for the food. And it's almost a joke because we really don't need to pray for the food. We know the food's going to turn up. We're not worried about not having enough food. We know we've got plenty. Why do we need to thank God for the food? It's something we have begun to take for granted. And yet the practice of grace is a slowing down and saying, this isn't something I take for granted. This isn't something I produced myself, although I was a participant in it. This is God's good gift. And this was really brought home to me spending some time with some people in Israel who come out of a Jewish background. And they don't say grace at the beginning of the meal. They pray about 10 times throughout the meal. Every time a new element, a new drink, a new type of food comes out, there is a moment of pause and appreciation and naming it. When bread comes out, we name that this is from the... this comes from the wheat. Like, it's actually connected to where it comes from. See, I'm so disconnected from it. You know, when the cup of drink comes out, we think about the vine that it grows on, that produced the fruit that now goes into this drink. And we name it and we tell the story. Some of the food that came around, particularly around dessert time, was actually smelled before it was tasted to soak in and say, oh, that's where this comes from. And we connect the story of what we're eating. And I wonder what it looks like in our context and our culture to say grace, to give thanks, to connect our food to the story of God's good gift. Everything you eat has a story. Where has this food come from? Maybe the reason we find it hard to say grace, maybe, is that if we thought about the story, it's not a story of God's good creation. It might be a story of injustice or a story of exploitation. when I eat that chocolate that was given to me at Easter, and I think about the story that the cocoa was grown by little children who are slaves to produce that which I just take for granted and delight in, how can I say grace for that? Or when the food is away so it can be Instagram worthy and it becomes a trend rather than that which is to nourish and sustain me, how can I say grace? When it's more about showing off how much I have than appreciating what I have been given. These are challenging ideas. I certainly find it challenging. What does it mean to recognize the story of our food? The other one that came across my this week that I wasn't aware of, probably because I don't eat it, but do you know the story of quinoa? Quinoa is like one of the trendiest foods in the Western world these days. But apparently quinoa is a staple, a bit like that enchema is in Africa. It is a staple in South America. And many, many poor people have lived on quinoa for years and now can't afford to eat it because the prices have hiked, because it's so popular in the West in trendy restaurants that it's now worth a fortune. And the people who produce it can't afford to eat it. How do we think about the gift and the grace of food in that context? So food as the gift of the Creator, food as story is the first thing I would challenge us to think about. Secondly, food as faith. For the people of God in the scriptures, the act of eating food therefore becomes an act of faith because we are trusting God to provide his grace. And this idea of it being an act of faith, I think, links to ideas of simplicity and gratitude, and yet we live in a world of hoarding and excess, of eating too much, rather than of recognizing this is about being dependent on the God who provides. We have to reckon with the injustice of our excessive consumption. We know this in terms of climate and, you know, the global inequity. We know it in terms of poverty and injustice in the world. What does it mean in terms of our faith? To trust that it is God who provides rather than to try and seek and grasp and provide and hoard and exceed for ourselves. Thirdly, I think in terms of thinking about is there enough to share, the Bible talks about food as an opportunity. Food is an opportunity to share and to be generous and to invite the other in. That's what I experienced in that village in Africa. Food is an opportunity for people to bless and honour and invite. How do we practice that in a context and culture and world where food is something that we throw away? The statistics are alarming and outrageous, and I have felt so convicted in preparing this message, so now I'm going to convict you all as well. Did you know globally that 1/3 of all food that is produced is thrown away? 1/3. That is 3.7 trillion apples every year are thrown away. God's good gift, opportunity to share with those who have nothing, and we just throw it away. 1.3 billion tons of food in the world, 50% of all fruit and vegetables thrown away. Because it is ridiculous, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous. Well, let's bring it just down to Australia. 7.3 million tons of food is thrown away every year. That is enough to fill 13,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools. And we only have 47 Olympic-sized swimming pools in our country. 13,000 Olympic swimming pools, or to bring it down more personally, that's 300 kilograms of food per person. 300 kilograms of food each we throw away every year. Is there enough to share? The top five foods that are thrown away: vegetables, bread, fruit, bagged salad, and leftovers. We never throw away the leftovers. I love it. I have to put my hand up. What do we do? How do we see food as an opportunity to share and show justice? And that's not even mentioning the climate impact of all of this. The average household in Australia, get this, throws away $3,800 worth of food every year. It's $4,000 that could be in your bank account from just the food that we throw away. Are you feeling convicted yet? What do we do about this? Food as an opportunity to share and show justice. Let me move on before I depress you too much. Food is also in the scriptures talked about as a spiritual discipline. When we hear these stats and we go, how do we respond to that? What is interesting to me is that built into our faith in the scriptures, we have practices around food that are meant to make us think about this and remind us and slow it down. There are practices of fasting and feasting right throughout the scriptures, and they're not ones that we're particularly good at, and they're not ones that I'm particularly good at. But the fasting and feasting both have a place in slowing us down and reminding us to connect our food to our faith and think about what's going on. In Isaiah 58 in particular, the idea of the fast is not connected just to your own, you know, suffering, taking it a hit for the team kind of idea, but it's connected to justice. You fast so that you might be just and give away what you had, so that you might experience what it is like to reflect on physical hunger and physical need and dependence on God. And in our global context, I wonder whether it is time for us to engage with the practice of fasting, both in terms of our relationship with God, but in terms of relationship with the world. When you have that experience of hunger and need of dependence, has anyone done the $2 a day challenge? On $2 a day, it really forces you to think very, very carefully about food, you know. Will I have soy sauce rice or will I have chili sauce rice today? $2 a day. And you experience hunger. And I realized, you know, I don't often experience hunger. Yeah, not really. I'm a little bit peckish and I'll just eat something. To put myself into that place, I wonder how that connects to the spiritual discipline of fasting, to the reality of food as sustenance from which we are dependent on God. But there's also practice in our scriptures of feasting, opportunities to celebrate, to enjoy, to soak in the delights of the good gifts of God and to share that with one another. So it's not an all or nothing. I think what the scriptures invite us to is there's kind of two extremes. On one level, we just see food as kind of just for survival. And that's unjust, and that's not what God wants. And that's what a lot of the world is experiencing today. Food is purely about survival. And on the other end, food is about excess and waste and status symbol and trend. And that is unjust too. And in the middle is God's good gift, food as gift and opportunity. So let me wrap up by going to the second question I had, which is who is invited to the table? Who is invited to the table? In Jesus' days, the Pharisees had a practice of using their tables as places of fellowship, a little bit like my friends in Malawi did, and a lot unlike my friends in Malawi did. For the Pharisees, your table was a place. To be honest, for the Pharisees, it was much more about who was out. And Jesus is really harsh on the Pharisees because their tables had become places of injustice and exclusion, where people were not invited to join them because they had some kind of disease or sin in their life, or because they associated with someone who was perceived to be someone who was sinful. Or they associated with someone who associated with someone who associated with someone who was seen to be sinful. And they had drawn all these barriers around their tables and turned their tables into places of exclusion and injustice. And Jesus comes along and welcomes everyone to his table. He sits down with the sinners and the prostitutes and the lepers and the tax collectors. And with him, he tells stories about tables, like the story in Luke 14, where he tells about a king who has a great banquet and the people who are invited can't come. And he says, go out and bring them in from the highways and the byways, the lame and the mute and the deaf and the disabled, the lost and the least and the last. They are invited to the king's table. This is the Jesus whom we are invited to follow. And he uses food as a way of expressing the truth of God's kingdom. Who is invited to the table? I would like us to finish this morning by asking you to do some of the work. Because I have been, as I said, challenged and convicted by this, but I know that I am not an expert and I know that I have a long way to go. And so I want to share with you, kind of drawing out of all this, what I see as some challenges in terms of putting this into practice. What does it look like to live this out? So I'll share them with you and then I'm going to ask you to take a few minutes, turn to a couple of people around you, and ask one another these questions. What does it look like for you to put this into practice? So I have four suggestions of practices for you that you might like to talk about what they would look like in your day, in your week, in your year. The first one is simply this: gratitude and simplicity. What does it look like to say grace for you, to really say grace, to be grateful for what God has provided at your table, to enjoy it, to soak it in, to benefit from it, but to not make it more than it is. To not make it a trend or a status symbol or something that you throw away, but to simply and gratefully receive it. Secondly, what does generosity and sharing look like for you when it comes to your food and your table? Maybe this is a literal challenge. I live in the city not far from West Camp, And over the last year, if you don't know, West Care is a ministry of Baptist care that was started by a Baptist church in the city. And they have a meal that is provided for anyone who needs it during the day, every day of the week, many homeless people. But they also have a food shop where people can come and get food. It's not a shop as in you don't pay, but people can take donated food when they don't have anything to eat. And during COVID, the increase in their demand for food relief went up 50%. Half again of what they had before. A lot of that was international students who didn't receive JobKeeper and didn't have any jobs and couldn't go home and didn't have any food to eat. But they also talk about elderly people who are isolated in their homes because they can't even invite a friend over because they don't have any food, any coffee, any tea to share. So it might be literally, what does it look like to be generous and to share, to buy some extra food when you go to the supermarket and donate it to someone like that. But it's also thinking globally. How do we fight the excess and the waste that is happening in our world? As I said before, you can't just send your vegetables to Africa when you don't eat them. But we can change our practices to be more generous and sharing. Baptist World Aid had just had a campaign around Easter of writing to chocolate manufacturers. It broke my heart a few years ago to learn that my favourite chocolate manufacturer, Lindt, is involved in unjust practices. And so to write to them and say, I really want to eat your chocolate. Can you please, please, please start looking into what's happening at where it's being produced and dealing with the injustice, because I would like to become your customer again. But there's power in that. There's, you know, consumer people power. If we say we're not eating it when we know the story, unless you change that story. That can lead to systemic changes as well as changing our hearts. Thirdly, this idea of fasting and feasting, what would that look like in practice for you? Have you tried it? Have you practiced the discipline, spiritual discipline of fasting? And what have you learned from it? And what does it look like to feast and to feast in a biblical way, which is an act of justice and enjoyment and invitation? And finally, probably really broadly and generally, but the idea of welcome and hospitality. Who can you invite to join you at your table? So, grab a couple of people around you, have a look at what's on that list, and ask the question, what would it look like for me to practice that this week, this year?
Hear a lot of talking and a lot of good discussion going on, and I know for us it started in a good place and we went on a tangent, which was still probably helpful. But the great conversations that Melinda's led us into of what God is calling for us personally. We follow Jesus to do this in our homes, doesn't it? And this is related straight away to in our home, isn't it? How can we be part of the story of God, and the story that God would want us to tell, that he is a host, Linda said. He is the host and calling us to a table of justice. How do we reflect that now? So please take these conversations and continue them. I think it was valuable for me having a conversation I had. Continue these. Let's continue to be church after this space as we have a coffee and consume together. AGM papers, the little booklet is available. Please grab one of those so you can have a read and be ready for the AGM in 2 weeks. Let me pray as we just finish this time together. Lord God, we thank you again that you are here, that you've been a good host to us this morning, that we've come to your table, and we know that this is where we gain grace and acceptance, love. Look, God, we've been challenged this morning. Challenged in a real practical way. Practices in the end are just the opportunities to reflect the heart of who you are and who you called us to be and who you want us to be. Look, God, we want to be people of justice and generosity and welcome, because you have been generous and you've shown justice to us and you've shown welcome to us. So Lord God, help us to make the small changes, to turn our eyes back to a way that is right. Help us to make those little changes in our lives that can make such a difference. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks.